Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
In the mid-18th century, amidst the rugged wilderness of southern France, a dark legend took form. From 1764 to 1767, an enigmatic and ferocious entity unleashed a reign of terror unlike any the locals had ever witnessed. With its immense size, fearsome jaws, and reddish fur marked with black streaks, the beast was said to have claimed over 100 lives, etching itself into the annals of myth and nightmare. The tales of the beast's savagery spread like wildfire, stoking fear and fascination throughout the kingdom. Armed with rifles and blessed weapons, scores of hunters ventured into the forest seeking to end the carnage. Yet, the beast eluded the best efforts of local hunters and even troops sent by the King of France himself. With each attack, the creature's legend grew, morphing into a symbol of the untamable wild and the mysteries lurking in the shadowed woods. This case file, join the theorists on a harrowing hunt through history as we set out on the terrifying trail of the Beast of Gévaudan.
Welcome to Alien Dearest Theorizing, Case File 325. The Beast. Gévaudan. I don't even know how to say it.
Gévaudan.
That's how they say it.
Now the Beast of Gévaudan.
That's how they say it.
Gévaudan.
I'm not even sure where that band is from. Powerwolf?
Powerwolf fucking rules, dude.
Yeah, I've looked into their... their album.
They're Norwegian for sure.
They're Norwegian.
Yeah.
This beast, this cryptid is maybe the king of human body counts as far as...
Over 100?
Maybe more, depending on which source you read. Say 100 plus bodies.
It's a lot.
It's awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
The Beast of Gévaudan is a cryptid.
You gotta throw on the accent every time.
Gévaudan.
Gévaudan.
Qu'est-ce que c'est?
There's a lot of mispronounced French in this episode. So everybody get ready for that.
You're welcome.
But you just give it like a after, and it's pretty
Just put more vowels than you think it needs on
as,
there.
I think you're like me and Zell are semi-experts because we got, you know, especially this time of year, we got a lot of francophones picking cherries and all that type of stuff. So we hear it a lot.
I bring back
it's a Quebecois though. So it's a little bit of the like,
it's a much
not
French.
As nice.
It's a
dirty
it's
French. It's very peanut butter mouth.
Dirty French. Yeah. The French would call it dirty French.
Tabernac. You know, all that type of shit. Bicyclette un stylo. All that.
Calculatrice.
Yeah.
The Beast of Gévaudan is a cryptid that takes us all the way over to the nice, you know, south central part of France in the years between 1764 and 1767. Had a 3-year reign to rack up its impressive body count that Zell already mentioned. So this is one of
I think it's really important to note too at the beginning of this. It's like, this is not like we're talking cryptidy, like lore. No, this isn't like legend or lore. This is a very well documented, legit fucking situation.
Terrorized.
Yeah, there are historical documents historical and periodicals. Like,
this is legit. This is too legit.
An actual
creature. Legit like, to quit.
To this day, not exactly, you know, unidentified creature that terrorized like the South. Like the southwestern part of France, like south central part of France, for three whole years. Where most of the story and most of the attacks took place is in, as already mentioned, is the, you know, as the name eponymous Gévaudan, which is a former, like province of within France. And Gévaudan is it's described as like an isolated, rugged, rural spot. So very much it's all forests and stuff like that. There, when I looked at the Google Maps, like today, it's like there are a lot of national parks there, like at least two or three. And it's definitely a place that you'd be like, yeah, if there was a dark forest that you would go in and find, you know, dangerous beasts and stuff, like this is probably exactly where you would look.
Well, this is not very accessible. And even hundreds of years later, in World War II, it was like the center of the French resistance because it was so inhospitable that it was like
So it's super believable that there could be like a creature lurking in there and not have been seen prior, right? Like
for sure.
Hiding within the depths.
Came out from the center of the earth, perhaps.
Yeah. And specifically
in the Gévaudan forest.
We're going to find out.
At the beginning of the 16th century, like Gévaudan, like that actual area had been actually extremely wealthy.
Say that again. Gévaudan.
Gévaudan. But after there was like the numerous like religious civil wars that France had during that time, like it pretty much ruined that area of the country. And not to mention like France during this specific
they've been getting
time,
their asses kicked for a while. France has had like a real bad run. Isn't this like right after the Seven Year War
wasn't a good time for them. No.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No. Even like, yeah, they've been taking L's.
Yep. They lost to Prussia. They lost to the British. And they had lost pretty much most of their overseas colonies at that point. So they were like really hurting at that point. People not super happy. So the locals that lived in that area were pretty much living in the hills, and they made their, they made their daily bread by tending livestock. So that's why, you know, this is part of the reason probably why this one is so, you have this area where all of these young kids, women and stuff are tending these flocks, are tending their livestock like out in these isolated areas. And this is like, you know, perfect opportunity for a bloodthirsty beast.
Now, do you think like the young, like especially young kids and young women are tending to these animals because like their fathers have died recently in war and stuff like that? Or is this just like a kid's job?
Just like they're just peasants in general. So it's just like, that's just the way of life probably. So
that's kind of what they do.
Okay.
So it's, you have all of these, you from a young age, you would have kids out there working alone out in the elements, you know, contending with, I mean, it's not exactly like it was safe to begin with. Most people, if you're like familiar with like a shepherding and that is never like a safe job. It's like you still have wolves
everywhere.
Predators, things like that. And it's like, you're also like out in the middle of nowhere. Like you trip and break your leg on some of these hills. Like nobody's coming out to get you or come looking for you for a while. The first appearance of this beast, it comes from a description in the summer of 1764 from a young woman who was caring for her cattle when this gigantic beast, she said, came bolting out of the forest. When she described the size of it, she said it was about the size of like a calf. And then it had like this unusually, what she marked as unusually broad chest.
It was jacked.
This huge mouth full of what looked like she could describe as like canine looking teeth. And one of the characteristics that would carry over into most of the encounters was the fiery eyes that she described, like these glowing red eyes that she perceived this beast having. Like in appearance also.
It's like a prerequisite for a beast. You got to have
glowing red eyes. Glowing red eyes.
Yeah, you need to have them. How are people going to know you're a demonic apparition if you don't have fiery red eyes? Yeah,
absolutely.
Come on. On the outside, this beast like had this, this is another one of the characteristics, typical characteristics would be like the shaggy reddish hair that was notable and not really normal to like other predators in that area at that time. And then there was also
a stripe, there, wasn't there?
Yeah, there's like they describe like this dark line running down the length of its spine. So like either like a darker line of hair running down there. Now this girl that had first sighted the beast, or this is the first like confirmed sighting that we have historically, she actually escaped thanks to the intervention of several large bulls that were in her flock and kind of, I guess, you know, acting probably on instinct, because from what I understand, like, you know, cows and livestock, like they'll kind of band together, you know, or perceive humans and dogs, you know, people who work with them as, you know, part of the flock, part of the herd. And they inserted themselves between her and the beast. So these large bulls kind of formed a circle. Ducks around
together.
Flying V style. Yeah. And,
I mean, they're probably more concerned with protecting themselves than their, but then her, but
they, or just like, the, or she threw herself into the middle of the herd being like, that's the, I don't know, but that's be, she gonna be.
Interesting thing too about the appearance of this thing is like, I remember her describing, I was reading that she had like, it had a thin tail, which is weird.
It didn't have like the fluffy,
it didn't have a big bushy tail like a normal canine or wolf or
like, we're talking like a rat tail, a little spindly little bitch,
maybe like a thinly hair. It could be, you know, just like sparsely haired or something like that.
Yeah.
But these bulls managed to like repeatedly charge at the beast until it eventually decided that, you know, perhaps it was just, you know, wasn't worth it at that point, and it took off back into, disappeared into the forest.
So all these murders could have been prevented if everybody in France just got their own guard bull.
Two guard bulls.
Two guard bulls. Okay.
Easy to come by, you know, go to a local pet store, say, hey, I need a guard bull.
Right? Like, this give is me like,
a, give me your biggest
guard bull. Everybody needs a service bull.
Go to your local animal shelter.
Get him a little vest.
Adopt, don't shop. Like,
this is my service bull. Don't pet him, please. All right.
But soon enough, the beast would begin its true reign of terror, as its first documented kill occurred on June 30th of 1764.
Ooh, kid's birthday.
When now you have something to something else to celebrate.
Jeez, the anniversary of the murder. Fuck. Makes sense.
Anniversary
of
the
fucking beast.
Mm, now you can call him the Beast of Chevron. You just call him
that. That's
the new nickname.
That is the exact date my family began getting terrorized by a fucking 5-year-old demon. So it's
that's,
it's
that's when it was birthed. Growing ever since, more violent.
Yeah.
This is when
he did bite his brother the other day.
There you go. See?
Okay. He's like turning. He's you well know, growing into it.
The beast is back.
Now his brother is going to turn into
Jesus.
They have two.
Nobody's safe.
This is when people in the area had discovered the mostly eaten 14-year-old shepherdess. Is it Jean or Jean? Like, how do they say Jean, right? Jean Boulet?
I think you should do is just go Jean-Jean.
Jean-Jean Boulet.
Jean-Jean.
Yeah. Jean-Jean Boulet.
Yeah, and everybody get used to the name Jean, because that was an extremely popular name around that time. And like 3/4 of the victims are all named Jean. They're all named Jean, which I assume is like after Joan of the Arc, but like it's just everybody's named Jean. Jean Boulet, Jean Vallée, Jean Bastide, like it's all
guys, jeans. Girls, it doesn't matter. Everyone's named Jean.
Whoops all jeans. Yeah. Whoops all jeans. She was discovered in the woods near a village of Leubac near Langon.
Yep, that sounds about right.
That sounds about right, yeah. Langon. And then shortly following that, in July of 1764, Jean Bastide and Jean Vallée were two other, Vallée?
I don't know.
You're doing great.
Two other young girls. These two were actually found and attacked and killed near another village in Puy-Laurent.
And these attacks, though, like, they're not like, they're like shredded apart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Mutilated.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, throats ripped out and stuff. And, like, another thing interesting, too, about this is all these different attacks, like Dan was saying earlier, most of these people, like, they're these kids, younger people working with cattle. So it's like there's easier prey, you know, in the vicinity of these murders. Like, these people are there, they have their lambs and all that type of shit. And it's like this beast is choosing human flesh over animal flesh.
Well, I mean, young humans maybe are the easiest prey.
Maybe.
Because I'm pretty sure one thing I read, or one documentary I watched, is guns, like muskets for the public, were outlawed in this region. Like, peasants couldn't have guns for chance of uprising. Right. So all these people were not...
Buddy, you're telling me this... What year is this? This is fucking...
1760s.
17, and they were already trying to come for our guns.
They already came for them. These guys didn't have any fucking guns.
They took them.
Well, I mean, they had muskets, so I mean, it's not as effective, but...
Where was the NRA when you needed
them? So pretty much all they had were knives or like pikes or like anything they could fashion or whittle to protect the flock. So they're easy targets when you're 12
years old. Yeah, but not to mention like fucking... Hold on, beast. I got to fucking load this musket.
No, you'll
back up.
You get one shot. It's preloaded. Yeah. So you would get one shot.
Yeah.
Like, and no rifling. So you never know. You're, unless you're within like,
you're going to be in the general. Yeah. Put it in the general direction. You might be
better off with a fucking sword or a knife than that a fucking nice
sword
musket.
Would probably be. Yeah.
Especially because you'd be shitting your pants. That first shot's not hitting.
Or you can't
unless
get
you're a badass.
You can't get it lit. It's like, no.
Yeah, fuck.
Yeah, so you had the two girls in July of 1764. And then shortly after that, in August, they had several attacks during that month. Like, so you had like one, then there was like another two, and then like another several happening in this. You had, I guess, one of the notable attacks from August was involved the killing of another young shepherdess, young girl, near the village of Chauderac. And this one, like they said, like several other children had been attacked while tending livestock. So as we go on, like people were, you know, notice a pattern here that most of the victims, or like the intended targets of the beast are all pretty much like young girls and children. Like it's just, you know, this thing is just going after what it perceives as easy prey or. Mm-hmm. Or something else is driving it to do that. But that's what it seems to prefer. So in October 8th, you know, later that year, 1764, pretty much like hours after a mauling, the beast was then seen at Chateau de la Bonne stalking another herdsman. So you had like groups of hunters were being dispatched from like villages. It almost came, it almost became like a kind of just like a community event where all like groups of hunters, men, you know, farmers were grouped together, I guess.
I heard Gaston came in.
Yeah. We'll get to that.
Yeah. No one hunts like Gaston.
Yeah.
No one.
No one fights like Gaston. Yeah. And they said that the hunters, like after they had like, you know, this mauling had occurred, you know, whether they were attracted by screams or something like that, you know, and identified that this was the beast that they had been seen or been heard about. They said that they followed the animal into like the estate's woods and tried to, you know, flush it out into the open so they could kill it. And this is this is kind of where the beast kind of almost takes on like a supernatural flavor to it, as the hunters said that they shot a volley of musket fire into this creature, and that the creature like fell to the ground, but then rose up immediately after and just took off, like it hadn't even been shot.
Did it bleed?
You can't kill it. Didn't bleed.
No blood.
There's no mention of blood. So,
yeah. It's weird though. Like, it's like for me, the already supernatural part is like, the prey, the victims. Like, it's so we have survivors. If we didn't have survivors and you were telling me this story, I would have been like, oh, this was some type of fucking creepy dude that had a fetish for killing fucking young kids, and they're blaming it on a beast because it's easier to fathom a beast being capable of mutilating, you know, bodies in this way than a human being. But it's weird. Like, you don't really, like, what kind of beast just basically
I don't know. It's like, it just doesn't fit to me like a predator. A predator is going to be going like, you know, like you said, like their kids are small. It's going to be easier prey, but it's not, it's going to go for animals as well. You're going to see mutilated animals around, you know, around. Well, you know what I'm trying to get at?
If it's like on normal instinct, you would think that like an animal wouldn't attack like a person. Like they probably have a stick. They have something that you would, you know, they have a stick, a tool or something that would be like perceived as kind of like a threat. And they would just be able to pick off, young livestock would be the easier target.
Well, maybe it's just like, because, you know, everyone's heard those stories of like that. The bloodthirsty lions in Africa. Once they get a taste of like human
blood. What is it?
Blood,
fucking heart.
The heart of darkness.
Heart of the darkness? Holy fuck, that movie's scary, man.
Yeah. Or whatever it is. But like, so, and same with like bears. Every once in a while, there'd be a bear who kills a person and then.
Especially when they're on cocaine.
Cocaine bear.
Yeah.
But like when a predator gets a taste of human blood and realizes that it's easy prey, it becomes part of the meal plan.
Right. Yeah. And this area, what's it perceived as being easy
thing
to kill,
on the menu right now is like fucking kids.
Well, that's what it is. So this area is like, I mean, now there's pretty much zero wolves in France. I looked it up. They say that maybe 1,000 in the whole country. But at this time, wolves are everywhere. And that's so shepherds, that's main shepherd's job is to guard the flock like against wolves, right?
And then
so,
what's interesting,
this doesn't look like, look like a regular wolf. This thing looks
bigger. Like you have wolves that at that time are like ubiquitous in France. Like everybody knows what a wolf looks like. And if you're a shepherd, of course you know what a wolf looks like.
I don't think the French are trying to reintroduce wolves.
Yeah.
Okay, Canada, fuck off with grizzly bears already.
You're going to reintroduce grizzly bears in France? What?
No, Canada's always
Canada. Had
the bear. They want to reintroduce wolves into what, Yellowstone?
Yeah, and now they're reintroducing grizzly bears here, or like we're not allowed hunting them.
Well, there's no hunt, so they're just growing.
No, well, you need the grizzly bears to fight the wild boars.
Yeah, the battle boars,
super boars,
super boars.
Yeah. Who's going to fight the super boars if not the grizzly bears? Like.
It's true, though.
The grizzly bears are going to turn on
Segway on bears. There's a grizzly bear that's claimed Big White as its territory. Yeah.
And it's fucking... My brother-in-law works up there and sent me a couple pictures, and it is fucking terrifying.
It's there. Like, once a bear claims a territory, like, it just roams around.
Kill it with fire.
You're going to have to. It's going to eat a hike. It's going to eat someone. Just a matter of time.
It's going to be the beast of Big White soon. Yeah. Just fucking mauling people.
Because what's going to happen, you're going to get tourists who know there's a grizzly bear. They're going to go looking for the grizzly bear. They're going to get a little too close.
Yep.
And it's over.
Yeah. Case file 600, the beast of Big White.
Yeah.
Hundreds of bodies by now.
Yeah.
The government is so lenient against this bear that it just lets it kill people because they don't want to kill it. The bear is more important than human life. All right.
Yeah. That's terrifying.
Anyways.
Sorry.
Back to the beast.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean that's something that, you know, lends weight to the interesting part of this is that everybody in France like knows what wolves look like. They, especially if you're a shepherd, you know, you're working out there all the time, you know what a wolf looks like. You've seen a wolf probably at some point from far away or whatever.
For sure.
But, you know, seeing one of these up close and people are like, that was no fucking wolf. Like, that's not a wolf, what I saw. You know, and you have like these...
Like the hunters said that, or were these the kids survivors? Because kids survivors could be exaggerating a little bit.
I think everyone who's seen it, everyone who's seen it says it doesn't look like a wolf. And now it's like, it's got an it's like, I think it's like one of the first international stories.
The story
reaches across, like it starts like popping up in like the stories about it start popping up in like newspapers in Boston, you know, in other places.
Britain.
Everybody knows what is now like the beast of Chiffon, especially since it's such like a month long, you know, months long saga, right? At this point that it's running on and you're just like, holy shit. Like, so now, after these, like this string of murders, Andrew mentioned previously, but we did have some survivors, right? We start to have some survivors make it out because I guess that like the attacks become so prolific that of course, like luckily you have some survivors that managed to make it out. So on the 12th of January, 1765, as the attacks continue, you had a 10-year-old Jacques Portefeuille. And like, I guess him and like seven other friends or children from the village of Villeray. were attacked by this beast. So, and it said that he, you know, Jacques fought the beast, off with like a pike. like an actual pike, which apparently garnered him like a royal accolades from the actual king. Like he was actually recognized by
the story. The story of that, which so I've read like a little more in depth version of it, is he, one of his friends got taken. Like it came up, it grabbed him, but pulled him away, and he like jumped into action and chased it down and like fought this thing off, like stabbed it in the side with the pike, and like it dropped his friend, and he like an act of heroics, you know?
Yeah, guy's a badass.
Badass. The guy's like, how old was he? Like 12 years old or something? 10 years old?
10 years old. Yeah.
Yeah. Fighting off the beast with a pike.
Yeah. And I mean, he got officially recognized for that from the King Louis at the time. Yeah, and
he's going to pay for his school.
Well, King.
Yeah, he got free education out of it.
King Louis is taking this whole series of events as another L for France because now the English. Now it's in the papers in England. They're like, oh, France, they can't even protect their own citizens from, you know, like, it's just like he hates, he just fucking hates. It's just
burning.
But think about it too. There's no way they're going to be like, these guys are fucking crazy. They're exaggerating like crazy. There's no way this is this giant fucking man wolf thing. It's probably just a normal wolf. Just a wolf. These guys, these pansies can't even fucking kill a wolf. Like, come on.
And then there's another event later that year in August where Marie Jean Vallée was apparently walking with her sister, and the beast attacked both of them as like leaping out from, you know, the darkness of the forest. And Marie actually squared off against the beast, armed with nothing. Like it said, that it was like a homemade spear. Like it wasn't
like a little lance, you
know? Pocket spear.
Yeah.
And not even a steel tip, probably like a whittled wood.
Yeah,
tip
just like too. A wooden spear that she had wildling. To manage to fend off this beast. And then she sent it, you know, running away. Actually, managed she
stabbed
to
stabbed it right in the like chest.
She put that thing in the chest and so, like it.
Like, what are the, like, we know wolves hunt in packs, right? Like, do we know that there's, what are the chances this is more than one beast? Because you got one that's getting fucking, is basically Tupac, 9 shots, couldn't drop him. He took it and smiled. And then you got one that got poked by a stick and fucked off. Like, one of these things is not like the other.
possibly. This is, I mean,
it's like weakness, pointy sticks.
No, or like, it gets injured, but it has regeneration.
Yeah, as supernatural.
Yeah, like one got shot a bunch and one got stabbed by a 12-year-old by a stick. And then Marie here fucking poked him with a stick too. It's like,
she got him in the lung.
Yeah.
Didn't like that.
I thought it was interesting.
Do you think she'd break the skin with a fucking little stick like that?
It's like a fucking whittled oak point, it's probably pretty strong.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, she was known as the Amazon after that, so maybe she was just like a little jacked girl. She was fucking just ripped.
The maid of Gévaudan is what they called it.
You know what? Humans are way stronger. The average human is probably way stronger back then. You just fucking then?
Yeah,
for sure. Like a peasant, someone working in the fields.
Maybe she's like from Rest of Development, like Anne, like low center of gravity. She's like a rock. Just gets down real low and fucking jabs them.
Maybe that's what it was. You know, when the bear attacks, you're supposed to jam the spear into like a rock and let it use its own weight to fall on it. Maybe she did something like that.
I mean, it's kind of funny that it's like she managed to wound the beast and like it took off and she didn't really get anything. She got known as the Amazon, but didn't really get any. She's like got called an Amazon. Yeah. They're like, you're an Amazon, you know, beast, you know, made of Gévaudan. And then, you know, he had all, Jake's got like a whole free ride scholarship for that shit. And she pretty much only got officially recognized for it with like a statue in 1995. Like it took that long to get like a statue made of her, which is a pretty cool statue.
This is a symbol of the time. She was female.
I was like, she's a woman. We don't need to send her out to school. What she need to know? Nothing.
Nothing.
Like, know how to wash clothes. And make wine.
Make croissant.
Croissant. But, you know, like we said before, we mentioned that the king had gotten taken serious interest in this. So, in that interest of the saving his people and trying to combat the threat, he dispatches his 71-year-old gun bearer, Francois Antoine. And so, I mean, this guy, I mean, he is a professional wolf hunter. Like, that's his job. He was known as the king's at the time. Like he held the position of the king's lieutenant of the hunt. That's so it's like, awesome I just
title.
I didn't see any, I, you know, I didn't see any picture representations of the guy, but in my head, it's like, you know, dude with an eye patch and like, you know, scarred up and like, you know, sweet gray ponytail and like, you know, one of those like sweet French overcoats, like revolutionary overcoats and everything. Yeah. It's just like walking out of there. I will take care of this wolf. And so they, you know, they sent him down there along with his son and I think like a number of other like, you know, royal hunters, you know, that they had in the bullpen, I assume. And then I guess he arrived in late June of 1765 and then with his team and his son. And then like everybody was like celebrating that they were coming down there. I mean, it's probably everybody knew that they were coming. So they're like, yes, like finally, like somebody's
signing autographs on his way into the forest. Like,
I mean, this just is what like guests saw and would look like coming in there.
This thing will be dead in a week.
Yeah. Just he goes into the local tavern, puts his boots up on the table and just like, we'll take care of this, you know, have no fear, peasants.
They do a whole song. Montage, everything.
I'm sure. There's a musical number, I'm sure.
No one's strong like Antoine. Like the whole thing, right?
Yeah. And but they got to work pretty quickly once they got there. So Antoine and his team went out and began like gathering information from local witnesses. You know, that's where probably we get a lot of like, you know, descriptions of the beasts and attacks from survivors found.
Getting down on one knee and like, tasting the grass a little bit. The grass, listening to the ground, like
yeah
it's just photo ops,
touching trees and stuff on the bark and being like, it's here. But they set up camps around the countryside. They kind of like organized systematic hunts to try and track down exactly where the beast was the fleshless beast out. So throughout July and August of that year, they conducted actual several hunts, like official hunts, and they found signs of the beast, which they reported as finding tracks, you know, partially eaten prey. But this creature, like
666 etched into fucking tree stumps.
Yeah, upside down pentagrams.
Goat's heads. Yeah.
Yeah. Glowing demon fire, wherever going on the tracks. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. And so this is where when they're searching for this animal, Antoine, you know, the king's lieutenant on the hunt is actually remarking on how this beast seems to possess unusual cunning and the ability to evade capture.
Yeah, I heard it said as unnatural cunning. Mm. Supernatural cunning.
Well, yeah, because he's like ducking poison. He's not setting off their booby traps.
He's not behaving like an animal.
Yeah.
So more man than smart, beast. You know, they're setting traps and they're trying to stake out places where normally he would be, but they can't seem to catch sight of the beast itself. So September 20th of 1765 rolls around. And on this day, Antoine and his team had actually encountered a large beast in the forest of the Abbey of Chazé. And they marked this wolf as being larger than usual and like exhibiting unusually aggressive behavior. And so this is when Antoine is like, this must be the beast. Like this is the beast that you know. So after like a very intense and prolonged hunt, they ran the beast down. And then after they killed it, you know, they took it in to kind of measure it and find out what it is. So the measurements of this wolf that they killed, I guess Antoine measured it to be about 80 centimeters at the shoulder. That's 31 inches for American people. 1.7 meters or 5'7" in length. And then it weighed approximately 60 kilograms.
5'7"
Okay, sorry.
And then 132 pounds.
It's a fucking big beast, dude.
That's a big dog. But as far as wolves go in the world, it's not a huge wolf.
Right.
It's a big like if you go like timber wolves or whatever in Canada, like you're getting like 180-pound wolves.
But we still got dire wolves.
They think there's still dire wolves up there in Alaska, Yukon area. Like some of them are so big. Fucking 200 pounders.
But what pretty much solidified the idea that this had been the beast is that when they cut it open, they had found human remains in the stomach. So they, you know, celebrated that this
must be the beast.
Finally,
license plate
killed the beast. Yeah, license plate.
Half a tire.
You know what? What else was super
interesting? That's my wedding ring.
super interesting about this too is like when they were doing their little, you know, post-mortem on this thing, they found the human remains, but they also found that it had a dew claw, which is a bit bizarre because wolves don't have dew claws.
They don't?
Like, no.
Oh.
Domesticate, like dogs have dew claws.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Where does the dew claw come from in de-evolution of the wolf?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was trying to do some kind of reading on the fly about that, and it sounds like it started mostly from like herding animals, herding dogs got them, but I didn't get that far. It's a lot of reading. Yeah,
it's a lot because the dew claws is useless. A lot of times I remove them because they get like broken off.
But it's not like I was reading that it's some dogs still have like active dew claws.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So they took this wolf's body and they preserved it and they took it to the Palace of Versailles where they presented it to Louis XV. And the king and his court were satisfied that this was the beast, that the beast had been slain.
This will appease the papers.
By the will of the king. Papers. You know? Yeah. And, you know, they rewarded Antoine handsomely for his efforts and then they went about their day. And they thought that it was over. They thought the terror of the beast of Chevaldon was over. That they had.
Well, it is, right, Dan? Everything's good. Everybody's happy and everything's peaceful.
It was the end.
France,
question mark.
The news gets out. News gets out to the public. All the peasants working those fields relax a little
rejoice.
Bit.
Yeah,
the beast is dead. The beast is dead. Yeah. Nothing to worry about.
You had the fade to black. You had the cursive, ding dong, the red cursive. Le fin. Question mark.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the ground where the beast was buried starts to shift a little bit. They should have burned the remains and they didn't.
Burnt the body. You're right.
Yeah. Perhaps they celebrated too early. And we'll get to that after the break.
Quick break. Be right back.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
We're back.
We're back.
So the people of France celebrated a little preemptively when they had their hero Antoine slay what seems to have been just either the first beast or it wasn't the beast at all. Because despite that successful hunt and people celebrating, you know, his success, attacks resumed in December of 1965. And this led people to doubt that he hadn't even killed the beast of Chevaldon.
How long did they kind of like
just a few months
subside for?
It was September. Yeah. Like they killed the first kill was in September, or the beast that they killed was killed in September. So just they had a few months of like relative peace, relative quiet. And then
the beast rebuilt itself.
Right.
In the underworld.
They summoned another one. Again. Yeah. Summoned another one from the Hellmouth.
All likely.
I think Antoine was taking a bunch of flack for this. Like, it was just like, you didn't even kill the real beast. You didn't do anything. And I mean, this makes the crown look even more weak at this point, because it's like, you can't even take care of your own people. And, and the people are like flying into a whole thing about like, this is, you know, now it's becoming even more enveloped in an air of like supernatural, where it's like it was the wrong beast, or it's like you killed, you know, there's two of them. Just rumors and speculation flying everywhere of being like, this is some kind of, you know, demon or some kind of werewolf.
I mean, the supernatural version begins.
Right. And you have, they have these things of being like, you know, there were some reports that this thing was walking on two, or people had seen it walking on two legs. Like, this thing looked like it had these, so it's long,
like a lichen. What is it? Lichen.
Lycanthrope.
Lycanthrope.
Man, that's werewolf. Yeah. There was also descriptions. I remember a couple of them being like, it had these long, dark nails. Like, it was like, it wasn't like claws, and didn't, they didn't describe them like claws. It was almost like, you know, it's like you would have nails on a hand that the, these beast was wielding, using to attack its
prey. Like when you see those fucking videos, or not videos, or like pictures, memes, whatever, but like with the fish with like human teeth. And that's so unnerving. You're like, what the fucking.
So by mid 1776, you know, the frequency of the attacks even increased. You know, more victims were reported.
Appetite increases.
These kills became even more gruesome, and that the, like people continue to describe this reddish, shaggy haired, blazing red eyed beast, with unusual strength and, you know, unnatural aggression,
that people, it was, well, you know, the rumors of this time people. Now start to say that the beast went for like decapitation, would like rip the throat and like just pull the head off of
pull
the
whole thing,
like
the guy just like ripping. It's like wasn't even eating them; it was just like ripping them apart, just
killing for fun. Mad, really mad.
You know, and of course, like, you know, the Catholic, you know, the religious people are getting in on it, because now you got like, you got priests and preachers and all the churches being like, this is a, you know, this is a plague sent by God for the sins of man. And so everybody's freaking out about that, that it's like, okay, this is some kind of demon or some kind of like holy punishment that we're suffering for some sort of transgression. You know, and it's out there. So, you know, they start organizing hunts again. You know, local groups of farmers and hunters are now getting together and again, having to defend their families, you know, their children who are, you know, that seem to be the primary target for this beast. And specifically one, Jean Chastel, was a local farmer from the region of Gévaudan. And he apparently had a reputation as a somewhat experienced woodsman and tracker, and he was very familiar with the wildlife and the terrain of the area, I guess, as you would if you were a woodsman. And so, like, he was, you know, participating in these community efforts and these groups of hunts to try and like find this beast. And so this is where kind of it's kind of agreed that the beast, or the legend of the beast, comes to an end, because it's said that Jean Chastel, on one of these hunts, like, he prepared in a very unique manner. And it was saying that on this specific night, he had, like, you know, said, you know, spent all night just like doing, you know, speaking prayers over a Bible. And then he actually was said to have used a special weapon.
You can guess what it is. Said,
a little bit of silver involved in this one?
It was. It was said that he had a rifle that was loaded with special bullets made from silver, that had been blessed by a priest. And this one was, you know, this was meant and specifically to kill this creature that somehow or perhaps was of supernatural origin. So on June 19th of 1767, Chastel and his group of hunters in the area of Mont Moquet, apparently they took position where they had sighted this beast like recently within the previous days, and they had, you know, they were going to wait their, you know, set up their little hunter's blind and waited to see if the beast would appear. When it did, there are varying, you know, as something like as epic as I'm sure this was, a lot of the accounts are, you know, they vary kind of wildly. But the common version is that Chastel, after reciting prayers, like during that time that they were in for the beast, and while it even as it approached to where, you know, they had been waiting for it, Chastel, you know, courageously and unafraid, calmly took aim with his silver, you know, his silver loaded rifle, and fired and hit the beast square on.
It's like the beast seemed to, like, after, like, the story after reciting those prayers, the beast seemed to just like calmly approach. It didn't like charge. It's like, it was almost like he summoned the beast
right
into like target.
This is like some multi-class artificer paladin shit where he's like, He's like reading from the Bible, and then he's got his rifle out, and then just like, bam, this nails that thing with the, you know, the holy power of God on his side, and smote the demonic beast. And so they describe, so the thing is like when, after they kill it, of course they go and they examine this thing, and it, most of the accounts, like they don't call it a wolf. Like they kind of describe it as a large wolf-like creature, because nobody's really sure to this day, like what it was. Like it's examined by local authorities, and everybody kind of agrees that it's like, it's not exactly a wolf. It doesn't look like a wolf. It has the, you know, it looks vaguely canine from what they are. And when they, you know, they cut it open during the examination, and they look inside the stomach, and they find human remains. And so they're like confirming again that you're like, okay, this thing, this is definitely, it's a weird looking fucking thing. And this is the thing that was attacking our people. And so, you know, being described as just its body, like looking at it, you know, this thing was unusually large and powerful. And it's in having the reddish fur that a lot of the witnesses had described. This pretty much like solidified everybody's idea that the conclusion that this was the beast of Jeffaldon, and they had killed it finally. And especially after this, the attacks stopped. So, you know, that was it. That was like, that was the beast of Jeffaldon.
It was a beast-like creature, but not. Mm-hmm. Or a wolf-like creature, but they never really call it a wolf.
Well, it's funny because it was like they say a wolf-like creature, but mm-hmm. it was never confirmed to be a wolf. Now, there are some theories on what it might have been,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting.
Yeah, werewolf.
Or werewolf. Sub-adult lion.
Yeah, that's one of them.
Which is super interesting because when you go back to the initial descriptions with like the red shaggy hair, the stripe down its back, the thin tail, another person remarked too that like when it was attacking, like the survivors were saying, it used its hands a lot, which doesn't really track for a wolf, but it would track for a big cat. Mm-hmm. And then again, like going for the necks, ripping the necks out and stuff like that. It's like... It, you know, apparently at this time there were a lot of menageries and stuff around France where they would have, like, they took an interest in science and different animals, so there would be lions. And it, like, being a sub-adult lion, it's kind of in that between stage, right? So a lot of people would see a lion and recognize that big mane and be like, oh yeah, it's obviously a fucking lion, but a sub-adult lion doesn't really have that mane yet, right?
Yeah.
So you can kind of see where people not being entirely used to what a lion would look like, a lot of them being peasants, not being well learned, you know, I don't think it's too far
a stretch,
you know, too far of a stretch. And then another interesting one too, apparently, like the wealthy people who would use hunting dogs would apply like boar's hides and stuff to their hunting dogs as armor to protect their dogs. That's cool. Right. And it's like, maybe this was one of these hunting dogs that A, would have been rabbit, or was it being trained and being sicked on people?
Mm.
Like, was there a serial killer out there using the their dog to kill people?
That's fucked up.
That's right.
That's fucked up. That's fucked up, boys.
I mean, the line. So the line. Go back to the line, because at this point, we're like, people are in Africa. People are taking those animals all over the world. Sure. Take them to zoos and traveling.
Been doing it
and
since Roman times. Yeah.
Yes, because like, so to one get out, maybe, right? And now it's not in this natural habitat. It doesn't know what to eat. It finds the first like easy prey, gets a taste of that blood, and then that's the prey.
Well, and then they talk like they're smart. Well, I don't know.
Lions usually hunt and walk like wolves though. But I mean, I think when you take that, when you take an animal out of it, it just adapts to, it does what it can to survive. So if it's just by himself.
But at some point it starts killing for fun, which cats have been known to do, like kill for the enjoyment of killing.
Especially house cats.
Being like the reddish fur, like the first thing that came to my head was like, oh, it's like, it, you know, it sounds like one of those maned wolves, but those live in like South America. They live in like Argentina. And I'm like, that's like how I would get one all the way over to like the south central part of France. They'd be like, the reddish fur is something that's like, you know, again, like that lends it kind of a demonic air with the blazing eyes and all of that. I will say that during the 1760s, This is a reach, but you're being okay. During that 1760s, you're coming into and like, you know, towards the Enlightenment, but right before that, you're on the tail end of alchemy being the primary science. Ooh, you know,
okay.
was there, and you know, France has a number of notable alchemists that come from that country. I mean, so you got people, mysterious figures like the Count Saint Germain, Jean-Baptiste de la Quintinie, and like, you know, Franz Mesmer, which we might talk about him at some point. There's some stuff like that. But like, you have, you know, all of these magicians, sorcerers, essentially. And it's like, if there was going to be a place where they were going to summon demonic beasts or, you know, some kind of alchemy practice that created some kind of hybrid monster, France would be the place for it to happen. I could see that in my head.
A wild lion and a feral dog.
Yeah. And it's like, when we were researching this, I remember something like this. And also, like, it popped up in the search, and there's a film called The Brotherhood of the Wolf from like 2001. And I remember going, and I don't think it's this exact story. Like, it's not, I don't think they directly reference the Beast of Gévaudan, but it's very similar
it's very Gévaudan-y.
Yeah. Well, it's like royal, like a royal botanist or a biologist is dispatched to investigate like attacks of some kind of beast, some savage attacks, which people are saying is a beast, in some French countryside town, and stuff takes a turn, which is interesting. It's got Monica Bellucci in it and Mark Dacascos. So it's like interesting. It's pretty fun. It's 2001, which is like, feels like a million years ago, but I'm like, no, I remember seeing that. if anybody wants to, you know, that's probably a fact. That's probably, you know, the best representation of this, this whole thing. But no, the Beast of Gévaudan is like, it's everywhere. It's like, they got their own websites right now. And now it's become like a popular, you know, as most like these things do, tourist attraction. From what I've seen, it's mentioned in Teen Wolf. It's like a primary character in the Teen Wolf series. Any type of like lycanthrope-based TV show or something like that, I think that like the Beast of Gévaudan makes an appearance, or at least a mention. Now, I think if there's like a D&D creature that is based on it, there's just like, yeah, this whole thing where it's like, which is interesting because it's like, this was a real, like we said at the beginning, this is like a real thing. Like, it happened. People died. Like, this thing killed people. It's not necessarily Bigfoot, which like there's not any recorded attacks of Bigfoot or, you know, death by Bigfoot or any of like what you could necessarily call like cryptids that you don't.
Did the Beast of Gévaudan get him?
Dan was too close to the truth.
You know,
of the Beast of Gévaudan.
He's gone.
Dan?
That's it. That's all. You got to take the reins, buddy.
Well, save it. The Beast was in fact a werewolf. I know for a fact because I was there. I unleashed the Beast.
Probably a cousin of yours.
I unleashed the Beast onto the people of France. It was back in the early 14th century. I was imprisoned for 3 decades deep in the catacombs beneath Paris. And for years,
was it one of those places with all the skulls?
Yep.
Yeah.
Right, down there.
Okay.
So for years, I was planning my revenge, concocting a plan to create a beast so evil and feral and so foreign that no one would believe it was real. Yeah. And that is the story of the Beast of Gévaudan. You're welcome.
I got chills.
Right, well, we'll be...
Finally the truth.
That's the truth. Dan didn't want to hear it, so I had to cut him out of the feed.
Yeah.
But, boom, that's it. When Dan leaves, we can say whatever we want.
Absolutely.
All right, well, we're going to be back to hopefully a full crew coming up next week. But until then, keep those eyes on the skies. Peace.